said you were mine, I thought you were mine. Do you know what Angelica said when we saw your first letter arrive? She said, be careful with that one, love. He will do what it takes to survive. You and your words flooded my senses. Your senses left me defenseless. You built me palaces out of paragraphs. You built cathedrals. I'm rereading the letters you wrote me, searching and scanning for answers in every line, for some kind of sign. 'Cause when you were mine,
welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, December 2nd, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, what a day. We've been kind of slow and steady with news, and then all of a sudden, well, bam, Thursday was packed.
Totally bam. So we'll skip the dad jokes right now and just say at the end of this, we're going to have a little conversation with Susan Johann, who's a photographer and has a thing at Signature Theater tonight. So let's get right to the news. The critics weigh in on A Bronx Tale, the musical on Broadway.
Yeah, we've talked about this show the last couple, you know, days this week, so I don't want to get into the details, but A Bronx Tale, the musical, opened on Broadway last night, and the reviews were, I think, James, pretty much what we expected. They were not raves by any means, but they were appreciative for the most part. Starting off, let's go to Charles Isherwood from the New York Times, who wrote, "Sometimes plain old pasta with red sauce is just what the doctor ordered. A Bronx Tale, which opened at the Longacre Theater on Broadway on Thursday, might be called the musical theater equivalent of that classic comfort food. It doesn't break ground or dazzle with unusual recipe, like, say, mixing rap and American history, but it delivers reliable pleasures with polished professionalism and infectious energy." Our friend Matt Winman of AM New York had a similar feel to his review. He wrote, "The characters are simple and the storytelling is derivative of better known musicals, West Side Story, Jersey Boys, and the tone is excessively sentimental and solemn. But A Bronx Tale, the new Broadway musical based upon actor-writer Chaz Palminteri's coming of age in an Italian-American neighborhood in the Bronx of the 1960s, is nevertheless an entertaining crowd pleaser and a poignant piece of theater. If it works, it works." There's a bunch of other reviews, and we'll have that list in the show notes at broadwayradio.com. But one that I wanted to pull out was from Chris Jones of the Chicago Tribune, because he really focused. He was one of the few that really focused specifically on one of the performances. He wrote, "The greatest strength of the piece lies in its characterization of Sonny, which was played by Tony nominee Nick Cordero, a far more benign mob boss than we are used to seeing. If Tony Soprano was neuroses with paradox writ large, Sonny, like this show, is a thinly veiled but incurable romantic, always comfortable in his own skin. I think people have loved Nick Cordero specifically as a mobster ever since the days of Bullets Over Broadway, so it's nice to see him getting some nice pub for a new show." So James, I think this is, you know, kind of what we said. This is going to be a show that more than likely is going to live or die on these, on its ability to pull out-of-towners and tourists in. It's a name that people are familiar with, and it seems like it's doing fairly well at the box office based on that already. And these reviews aren't bad. They're going to have plenty of pull quotes. So I think this is about as good as you could probably hope for the reviews for A Bronx Tale.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Isherwood hit the nail on the head. You know, probably the most widely sold dish in New York City is pasta with red sauce. And it's an oldie but goodie. And it sells a lot of them.
Hey, you throw in some meatballs and we got a good day. Mwah.
Oh, Tamanini.
We're a bunch of, just a bunch of Dagos doing a podcast.
All right. The Ambassador Theater Group to renovate the Lyric. Paramore is going to relocate.
Yeah. That headline was written early, James, because I had to go see She Loves Me at the big screen. And then all hell broke loose because there was another press release after that. So, okay, first, this is a weird story. Yesterday, the Ambassador Theater Group announced that they would be temporarily closing one of their two Broadway houses in the spring of 2017. The other house is the Hudson, which still doesn't have an inaugural show to rechristen that that house as a Broadway theater. But they announced that beginning in May of next year that the Lyric Theater would undergo renovations, and that due to these renovations, Cirque du Soleil's Paramore would be vacating the house at the end of April. Cirque says that they are currently in discussions with several theater owners in New York and around the world about bringing the show to a new venue. It's already planning a German run in 2018. James, if me personally, I can't imagine this going to any other Broadway house, but maybe having a little bit of a run at either Radio City, which has a long relationship with Cirque, maybe their other theater at Madison Square Garden. So if it's going to stay in New York, I would have to think it's going to be in a non-Broadway house. But anyway, back to the more exciting things. Whether or not there are actually any renovations, this seems weird to me, James, and we talked about this off air, and you have a better idea of this than I do because you've been in that theater a lot more than I have. But the Lyric is one of the newest and most technologically advanced theaters on Broadway, thanks in part to Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark's residency there just a few years ago. It only opened in 1997-98 when it combined two theaters into one as the Ford's Theater for the Performing Arts. It is, as we've talked about before, a massive house, a barn, if you will. But it's fairly, you know, compared to these hundred-year-old theaters, it's as new and as up-to-date as it could possibly be. So, James, you and I were texting just minutes after this press release was sent out. We were trying to figure out what could go in there. We were talking about a bunch of possibilities, including that King Kong musical. But we didn't really have to wait very long because less than an hour or so later, we got the official word that whether or not there are actually any renovations to be done at the Lyric, if they are done, it's going to be because it's part of a campaign to bring the West End production of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child into that large, cavernous, cursed barn. As James posited to me earlier, in a move that was potentially designed to beat Michael Riedel to the publishing punch, another press release was sent out that confirmed that the Cursed Child producers Sonia Friedman and Colin Callender with J.K. Rowling are in exclusive talks to bring the show to the Lyric, with rumors from Riedel indicating a potential spring 2018 opening. That would mean that from April of 2017 to probably March or April of 2018, that theater is either going to be being renovated or is going to be dark. James, your memory is better than mine, apparently, because you say that we discussed the possibility of Harry Potter going into the Lyric on a previous episode. And since that makes us look smart, I'm choosing to believe you. But help me understand these renovation things. Obviously, the whole buzz about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in London is don't share the secret. So if we haven't seen the show, we don't really understand all of the tech that is required for this show. We can imagine because of the world that it's told in. But they did Spider-Man. They're doing Cirque du Soleil. Do you really think that it needs that much renovation, a year of renovation and load in and whatever else they have to do to get ready for Harry Potter?
Maybe they don't need a whole year of renovation and load in as much as they need that show to be in that theater, and they're willing to leave it empty until then. What do you think?
That's fair. Yeah, that's actually fair. But I don't know that they need to close Paramore that early. I mean, because as we've talked about, despite, you know, the review that you gave it, Paramore occasionally breaks $1 million. I mean, it's a really expensive show, but I'm just surprised that they're kicking them out effectively that early. Maybe there's some contractual stuff that we aren't privy to. It just seems odd. I you know, apparently we discussed Harry Potter going into the Lyric, so we're brilliant, obviously. And we've talked about how everybody on both sides of the Atlantic is expecting this show to run for 10, 15 years and make a boatload of money. So it totally makes sense that ATG wants to get them into the Lyric because it is the biggest house on Broadway. It just seems kind of surprising to me that they're kicking out a show that is, you know, fairly successful. I mean, it's about as successful as anything's been in that house for a long time.
Yeah, so I was just looking at what else has been in this house. The Lyric Theater started off.
It ain't good.
It restarted as Ragtime, of course, in 1998. Jesus Christ Superstar, 42nd Street, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Hot Feet, Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, The Pirate Queen, Young Frankenstein. Hey, did we talk about Young Frankenstein coming back as a smaller?
Yeah, we've talked about it before. It might have been on a day when I was by myself, but yeah, we've talked about it a couple times.
Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, On the Town, Lord of the Dance, Dangerous Games, and Cirque du Soleil. So they need a hit in this theater.
Do they? Yeah.
And you know, did you hear anything possibly about Paramore maybe going into the Hudson? same owners, move it across?
It is the same. It is, but I mean, the Hudson only seats, I mean, it doesn't even seat 900 people, or doesn't even seat, seat 1,000 yeah. people. I can't imagine that they'd be able to keep it afloat.
It's a really shallow theater, too. So they could, I don't think they could pull that off. So I guess that what they'll do is they'll wait for things to loosen up after the Tony Awards and then and see where the numbers are at that point. But I tell you, it's certainly unexpected, and it's kind of exciting.
It is. Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's fun. You know, us armchair producers and theater owners, we like to kind of move the pieces around the Broadway map and try to figure out what fits in where. And this is one that we kind of foresaw in terms of Harry Potter coming over, but I don't think we saw, you know, the Ambassador Theater Group kicking out a tenant more or less a year before a new one would take over. So it's fun. I'm sure it's going to pay off if they do get Harry Potter. I have no doubt that they're going to make a poop ton of cash. So I guess it's a good move for them if it happens.
So Rob Diamond saw the Harry Potter Cursed Child over in London a few months ago. He didn't come back to the office and spill all the beans to you?
No, he would not share the secret. He did both halves of the show, because it's part one and part two. He did both in one day, and he was checking in with us on Slack in between, and people were trying to get some info, but he kept the secret. He kept his mouth shut, so good for him, I guess. I guess this is the time where I have to admit that I've never read a Harry Potter book or seen a Harry Potter movie, so I guess if it comes to Broadway, I guess I've got to catch up. Do I?
As far as I know, this is a kind of a standalone thing. And I mean, it might enhance your viewing pleasure to know the language beforehand. You know, you got to know what a muggle is.
Yeah, I'm a completist. So I feel like I always have to watch everything and read everything to understand the whole thing. So if I don't start at the very beginning, it's just so hard to catch up, and there's so many books and so many movies. I don't know if I can deal with James. I might just skip this one.
All right. What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, we got some fun stuff and some not so fun stuff in the show and casting news today. When it was announced that the new musical Come From Away would be moving into the Gerald Schoenfeld Theater in March of next year, rumors began circulating that producer Scott Rudin was exploring options to find a third Broadway home for his Tony-winning play, The Humans. Well, unfortunately, yesterday it was confirmed that they would not be finding a new house for Stephen Karam's play, and that it would officially end its Broadway run at the Schoenfeld on January 15th. And that would also coincide with the end of its Broadway run as well. However, the good news for fans of the play is that in November of 2017, it will kick off a national tour at the Seattle Repertory Theater before moving on to engagements across the country. As we've talked about before, we don't see straight shows touring very often. And when we do, there's something, usually something big and fancy like Curious Incident or War Horse. So to see an effective family dinner table show, even with some of the otherworldly aspects of The Humans going across the country, even if it's in smaller theaters, I think that's awesome. And I hope it comes somewhere around Central Florida so I can see it. In other news yesterday, MCC announced the extension of their new musical, Ride the Cyclone, which we discussed earlier this week. The show received tremendous reviews after it opened on Wednesday, with New York Times critic Charles Isherwood writing, "This delightfully weird and just plain delightful show will provide the kind of thrills we look for in all musical comedies, however outlandish their subject matter. An engaging and varied score, knocked out of the park by a superlative cast, and a supremely witty book. The strong reviews have thus far added two more weeks to the musical, which, if you remember, is about high school students killed in a roller coaster accident, as the show will now run through December 29th at the Lucille Lortel Theater. With this kind of weird, quirky idea and good reviews, if it keeps doing well, this is one that I could see running for a little bit longer as well. Speaking of extensions, we also learned yesterday that the Irish Rep has again extended Finian's Rainbow, led by Melissa Errico. The show will now play through January 29th of 2017.
All right, next up, the Hamilton mixtape performance was a success, wasn't it?
Oh, man, apparently so. We'll get into that. But we did want to say yesterday we talked about this return of the Ham for Hammer. We weren't sure. We kind of thought it might be outside. You kind of thought it was inside. We did get clarification from our friend Shane Marshall Brown, who I'm not exactly sure what his title is, but he's really important. He's the press rep. Okay, so he let us know that the Ham Show was going to be inside the Richard Rodgers, and oh my, was it ever. So I did not watch it live. I was in the middle of doing some stuff and had a conference call, so I didn't watch it live. I then went back to watch it on YouTube because the live stream that they did had been archived. I noticed that it was like nearly a half an hour long, which is awesome. Then I hit play, James, and there was nothing. It was silence. There was video, but there was nothing. I was trying to watch it before I went and saw She Loves Me. So I go over and I scroll through, see Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeting. Apparently, YouTube blocked the audio on the Ham for Ham performances because they found it to be in violation of copyright of his own stuff. So eventually they got it worked out. When I got home from She Loves Me, I tested it. The sound of the audio works. I haven't had time to watch it with audio yet, but as I kind of scrolled through, there are performances from so many people. I saw The Roots. I think I saw might have saw Nas in there. I saw Regina Spektor in there. It is a who's who of some just fantastic performers. And if you are excited about the Hamilton mixtape that came out today, there is no doubt that you're going to want to check out this. It's actually 18 minutes, not a half an hour, but it's a 20-minute video of all these performances, and it is just a special thing. Again, James, we talked about the Ham for Ham being something so unique and reaching out to a new audience. This is definitely that. The one track that I have heard tweeted about or seen tweeted about and heard people talking about more than anything is the performance from, I believe her name is Andra Day. I've never heard of her before. I'm not familiar with her. Apparently she does Burn, and I have not heard it, but I've seen so many people tweet about it. I actually have it queued up on YouTube to watch that as soon as we are done recording. So apparently that is one hell of a performance of that song.
Ja Rule and Ashanti back together.
Exactly. That was exactly my thought. I can't believe I didn't say that first.
So that is awesome, and you can get it on Amazon, all sorts of other places. The funny thing about the YouTube thing, it's just you just can't fight the YouTube machine when you get chewed up in there. Broadway Radio used to be on YouTube all the time as well, but we had so many takedown notices and so many blocks and things like that, it became just too much work to keep letting them know again and again that we had the permission to play the music that we play, and it just was.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, well.
So let's end on a fun note here. You saw She Loves Me, and so did a bunch of our listeners. So tell us, what did you think?
Well, yeah, I'd been asking people to let us know how the crowds were at the different places that they were at. Our friend Greg Christensen said that he saw it in St. Louis. It was at a small theater, but it was sold out. We also got a notice from Katie Sataro, who was in the Cross Gates Mall in Albany. She said that there ended up being about 50 people there. Down in Central Florida where I was at the Disney Springs AMC Theater. And it was, James, movies almost never sell out because there's always the space in between the groups. But it was about as sold out as you're going to see a movie. There were people down in the front few rows because they couldn't get seats up top. I was so pleasantly surprised by how many people were there. It seemed like there was quite a few fans of Broadway. There was some Laura Benanti fans. There were some Zachary Levi / Chuck fans, and they all got their money's worth, James, because my issue, as we've talked about before, was that I didn't think that the camera direction, the camera staging, and the camera technology really captured the wonder and the excitement of the stage production. Man, on the big screen, it did. It did justice to the work that was done. And I got to tell you, I loved Laura Benanti's performance. When I was watching it on my computer monitor, to see her facial expressions on the big screen, she is so funny in this show. Same thing with Jane Krakowski and Zachary Levi. The whole cast was just so incredibly – it was so much more humorous and enjoyable than even I realized when I watched it on the small screen, and I knew the show pretty well. So I loved that. My other issue with the live stream that Broadway HD did was that the cameras made it look very thin and didn't really look super professional. The video quality was fantastic. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, major motion picture quality, because those are usually shot on film. So those have a deeper, richer look. But in terms of something that was filmed live, James, I was really, really impressed with the quality. So if this is the quality that eventually Broadway HD gets to, whether it's on the small screen, because this is going to live on their streaming service from now on, I am all for it. And I was really impressed. Broadway HD is its own little scrappy startup, and they are figuring things out as they go along. So I really, really appreciate that and respect that. And it looks to me, just from seeing this thing on the big screen once, that they are starting to get it figured out, and I applaud their efforts.
That's awesome. I'm really excited. It's gotten such good word of mouth. Hopefully this means that lots of others down the line. I mean, we have Allegiance queued up, and that's coming. Yep. And good things for everybody involved. All right. So we're going to talk to Susan Johann in a few minutes. But Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending your week with us. Take a listen to This Week on Broadway. On Sunday, we're going to have Telly Leung talk to us about In Transit and Allegiance, the big screen version coming towards us, as we just talked about. And if not, we'll talk to you on Monday.
Trying to catch your eye from the side of the ball. Everybody dancing in the band's top volume. Run to the rhythm as they whine and dine. Saying to myself, hey, this one's mine. Shorty made her way across the room to you. And I got nervous thinking, what's she gonna do? She grabs you by the arm and thinking we're through. Then you look back at me and suddenly I'm next. Look into your eyes.
With us, we have a returning guest. Susan Johann, who is a photographer, is visiting us again. She makes her home both in New York and in North Carolina. We spoke to her in North Carolina a few months ago back on Broadway Radio. I guess it was in July or so. Susan, welcome back.
Yes, it was. Oh, thank you. It's great to be here. Great to be in New York.
Tell
I
us,
love this town.
Why are you here today?
Well, I'm here today because tomorrow at the Pershing Square Signature Center, they're going to do a book signing of my book, Focus on Playwrights, and we're doing it at the bookstore there on the second floor. And people are going to come, and I hope a few of my playwrights will show up, and we'll have a great time and raise a glass, and I'll sign some books and, you know, visit with old friends. Both the people in at Signature Theater, where I was the photographer for about 15 years, and then a lot of the playwrights, and just having a good time. New York is a great place. I love to sign my books, of course. That always makes me happy. You see, people seem to be loving it, so I'm happy about that, too.
So let me jump in here for a second. Last time we had you on, you were on the weekly broadcast, but today you're on the daily broadcast. So when you say tomorrow, you actually mean Friday, December 2nd.
Right.
Friday, December 2nd, from 5 to 9 p.m. Down at Signature on 40 on West 42nd Street, on 480 West 42nd.
That's right. At the corner of 10th Avenue, you see a lovely awning. And when you walk in and go up the stairs or in the elevator, you'll see a lot of my posterized pictures of the playwrights. That's not how they are in the book. Of course, they're very fine prints in the book. And on the second floor, there's a beautiful cafe, and then there's the bookstore, and there are three theaters up there, and lots happening tomorrow night. One of the things that are happening is my book signing. So
well,
that's what's happening.
And it's
December 2nd.
It's free and open to the public from 5 to 9 p.m.
It is.
And
it
the
is.
Book
Drop
is
by.
Gorgeous. It's an excellent, excellent present for any theater fan in your life. And,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so go out and visit Signature Theater this evening, Friday, December 2nd. And if, in fact, people are listening to this after the fact, after December 2nd, your book is in the Signature bookstore, isn't it?
It is. And other places, you know, the usual suspects in town here and on the web if they need to But I would be thrilled if they came up and told me they were friends of James Marino and Broadway stars and say hello. That would be great.
Well, Susan, I am so glad that you are in town and you gave me a call to let me know that you're in. And I'm so thrilled about this. And thank you so much for coming back to Broadway Radio to talk with us.
It's my pleasure. Absolute my pleasure.
Angelica tried to take a bite of me. No stress, my love for you was never in doubt. We'll get a little place in Queens and we'll figure it out. I've been living without my family since I was a child. My father died, my mama cried. I grew up buck wild, but I'll never forget my mama's face, it was real. As long as I'm alive and shining, swear to God, you never feel so
helpless.
Look
into your eyes and the sky's the limit. I'm helpless, baby. Yeah.